Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan delivered his first State of the City speech last night before a jammed invitation-only crowd. His message was clearer. We are going to change what it means to live in Detroit.
After 7 weeks, I'll report this to you here tonight, what I believe for sure. The change has started. The change is real. And Detroit is not nearly as far away from turning around as most people think. Thank you all very much.
Even among those who have that wait-and-see attitude, the mayor's speech is being praised today for what many believe is a refreshing attention to detail and the sense that a team is hard at work. Detroit Free Press columnist Nancy Caffer joins us now. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Cindy. Thanks so much for having me.
Good to have you. Well, before we get into what Mike Duggan talked about, let's talk about how he said it. No teleprompter?
No teleprompter, and I don't think notes either.
Mm-mm-mm. That is a 45-minute speech from the heart. Well, he did that speech, in a sense, going to all those home meetings when he was deciding whether to run and kind of doing that stump speech. So he's now in a position to say, we're doing the things I've talked about.
He is, and when you listen to him speak, I heard him speak twice this week at another event and then at the State of the City last night. He goes into a surprising level of detail. He talks about bus routes. He talks about conversations with workers. He talks about conversations with residents. It comes through loud and clear. He seems to really be trying to understand the shape of the government that he's running and trying to understand what people need from it and why it's not meeting those needs.
What struck you the most as far as the tone of Mike Duggan's speech as compared to what you've heard in previous State of the City addresses with Dave Bing and Kwame Kilpatrick?
Well, he talked, first of all, like I said, he talked a lot about people he's talking to and input he's getting, not how he's going to do things and how, you know, I'm going to get this done, but how his team is going to get stuff done and about what people need him to get done. But he also, honestly, just sounds like he's got a lot of enthusiasm for the work, which is a real great thing to hear. It's a very hard job he has, and it's the kind of job, I believe, that if you don't have enthusiasm for it, it's just too hard. You have to love this work and want to excel at it and really have an appetite for it.
What did Duggan say about the elephant in the room, if you will, the presence of an emergency manager who has total control over finances?
But he's made no secret about the fact that he would prefer there not be an emergency manager. But, you know, he wants to be mayor of the town. He wants to run the town.
Yeah.
But they have a power-sharing agreement that was put out by the emergency manager's office. The emergency manager is going to run the bankruptcy. The mayor is going to run city services, of course, with the emergency manager's final approval. But, you know, I think it's a good pairing. You have an incredibly experienced, seasoned bankruptcy attorney running the bankruptcy, and you have an experienced government administrator running the city government. This is a good team.
And we saw city council members sitting there at the Irma Henderson Hall last night applauding. I know that, you know, there's political posturing, but there does seem to be a sense, does there not, that he is able to play nice with city council and vice versa at this point?
Well, he's an experienced politician, and, you know, he's not going to make the mistake that some other leaders might make of thinking that they can marginalize city council or work around city council or not court the council. The council is a legislative body of the city of Detroit, and they have a charter-mandated function, a fiduciary responsibility to examine documents and proposals and cast votes that are in the best interest of the city and of Detroiters. And, you know, anyone who thinks that they can do an end run around the council isn't understanding how the system is meant to work.
So let's go through some of the things that he did cover, because that consistent positive review is, gee, we actually heard some details.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about blight.
Well, he is setting an aggressive blight removal schedule. This money that he's talking about is part of the $520 million that the emergency manager Kevin Orr set out in his plan of adjustment that was sent to the bankruptcy court last week.
Mm-hmm.
But this is money that's specifically from the fire escrow account. This is money that removes burned homes. And that is, I think, a good thing, because there's always going to be debates over where houses need really to be demolished, which houses are too far gone to save. But when they're fire damaged houses, it's a little easier to say, yeah, this one's got to go. So, you know, but clearing up blight, I mean, it is incredibly damaging to the city. These blighted, derelict houses that aren't maintained, that aren't livable, are havens for dumping or for, you know, unlawful activity. And even if they're not dumping and illegal activity going on there, it's just very dispiriting, I think, to live in a neighborhood and be someone who cares about your property and cares about your neighborhood and to have these persistent problems that you don't have the power to fix, that they're just your environment degrading around you.
He also called on state lawmakers, right, to help out by passing that scrap metal bill.
He did. He's pushing that scrap metal bill hard. It is a bill that would make it more difficult for scrappers to sell the three of the most high target theft items, which are catalytic converters, copper wire, and air conditioning units. Mm-hmm. This bill would make it more difficult for people to sell those pieces, and those are the ones that are targets. Those things that are targets, and they're things. The horrible thing about this, Cindy, is that if someone steals those necessary components out of your air conditioning unit, mm-hmm. they may get $20, $50, $100, a couple hundred dollars for them. But it can cost the homeowner or the business owner who's been victimized thousands of dollars to repair this. It's like,
wow.
It's such an awful, destructive thing.
So that is something state lawmakers could do. The other thing it struck me, it reminded me of the line in the movie Gladiator when General Maximus says, "At my signal, unleash hell." And it sounds like the city is going to do that toward negligent landlords.
Yeah, that's another problem is that there are people, because I think there's so many complicated factors that go into this, because of economic stress, because of the blighted environment generally, it is very easy for people who own property not to maintain them, and it becomes the norm. And even folks who might otherwise feel like they needed to make investments or do maintenance to their property kind of feel like, well, no one's going to call me on it, so why do I need to do this? And so, yeah, he's got a very aggressive plan to force property owners to either improve and secure and their property, or he says they're going to sue to seize those properties and sell them in the tax auction. Now, that's not there's some problems with that, too, in that we have more derelict properties coming into the tax auction every year than we can really handle. But
he's serving notice, though. He's throwing the gauntlet down.
He really is.
And what did he say about just the fact that city services are so dismal? What did he address during the speech last night that gives people hope that he's aware of it and doing something about it?
Well, he's just, he's really, I think his just the ease with which he speaks about, he spoke about a bus route that didn't make sense and how they worked on that. In a speech I heard him give earlier this week, he talked about riding with a snowplow driver who was saying, the way our dispatch is done doesn't make sense. I go out of my way. I could do more streets if we were able to rationalize the system. I think that this level of detail, that he's really following these processes through to find out why they're not working. This is a very hands-on approach.
And he's created the district offices with managers, so at least that brings City Hall closer right into the neighborhoods, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. We've seen neighborhood City Halls before under previous mayors, and they sort of seem to come and go during different administrations. I think it's all going to depend on the implementation of that. It's a really good idea, and with the new district council system in place, hopefully there's some opportunities for the mayor's neighborhood or district offices to coordinate with those district council people and really try to get residents' voices heard, to get their concerns brought to City Hall in a way they can be addressed, because that is, a persistent complaint in Detroit is investment and attention is paid to the developing, comparatively prosperous areas of Midtown and Downtown, but the neighborhoods suffer. And those, but yet the neighborhoods are the bulk of Detroit. And so those have to be brought along. These improvements have to happen in the neighborhoods as well.
We also know he talked about EMS and buying more ambulances and asking the federal government for money for more buses. He talked about the M1 and Red Wings Arena as job development. I'm wondering, was there anything that you wished, Nancy, that you'd heard or wished he had said?
Well, I think he hit a lot of the key points. It's worth remembering that the city's police department continues to report to emergency manager Kevin Oren. Obviously, public safety is the city's most pressing problem. Detroit Public Schools, obviously, also not underneath the mayor's jurisdiction. Those are in the current environment with the emergency manager in place, he can't, he's not in charge of the police department, so he can't do a lot of stuff there. He's never going to have control of DPS unless we have some major structural change. So two of the biggest issues that affect quality of life in the city and the interest of people in moving here or staying here are kind of out of his control at the moment.
So what will you and your colleagues on the Detroit Free Press editorial board, now that this speech is said and done and out there, what will you be watching for?
Well, we got to see what he does. These relationships are in place. He's working with city council. He's working with the emergency manager. He's very careful to talk about how much he respects the work line-level city workers are doing, which is also huge because I believe that people in the city most people who work for the city work very hard and they want to do a good job. I mean, they're regular folks just like you and me who come to work every day. But I think that there's a wide perception in this Metro Detroit that folks who work for the city are lazy and they don't do their jobs. It's just not true. And to have the mayor acknowledge that and praise them for the hard work that they do in horrible conditions where they don't have adequate resources, I think that positions him a lot better to get good results out of people. And so, you know, what we'll be watching for is to see how these relationships, whether they're sustainable with workers, with the mayor, or with the emergency manager, with city council, and whether he's able to follow through on these initiatives.
Detroit Free Press columnist Nancy Caffer. Always a pleasure. Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you so much.